Welcome to episode 181 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Josh Grunberg about the world's best sports videos in your feed.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who is improving his free throw shooting with Wilson X Basketball, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and my free throw shooting is improving with the Wilson X ball. For those of you who don't know, it's a Bluetooth-connected Internet of Things basketball brought out by Wilson. I've had it for a year now, and it... It detects when the makes and misses and connects to the smartphone. So my shooting actually is improving. Funny thing is, happens when you track. Welcome and thank you for listening to Sports Geek. My name is Sean Callanan, and you can contact me anytime on all social media platforms at Sean Callanan on most of them, or you can use the old-fashioned method of Sean at sportsgeekhq.com. Thank you for listening to the podcast. You might be listening to it on iTunes, on Stitcher, now available on Google Play, or my favourite app, Pocket Casts. Really thankful for this week's interview. I had a bit of a scheduling issue, so I put up the request into the SportsBiz Slack and messaged Josh. Josh is with Whistle Sports, and it was good because we'd been talking backwards and forwards in Slack on a few different issues, and so we get to discuss a whole bunch of things. But before I get into the interview, I just want to give you a bit of an update on some of the stuff that we're doing at Sports Geek and how we can, you know, how we can help you. Love to help podcast listeners. If you're someone that needs help in the digital space and the commercialization valuation space, want to drive more revenue from your digital, please book in a time for a phone call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call. I'm happy to get on a call with any listener to discuss what they're trying to look at. Just in the last week, I've been working on some digital proposal valuations for a rights holder in Switzerland. And it's been fun sort of pulling in digital assets, social assets, in-stadium activations, as well as data and user-generated content campaigns, and producing the valuations so they can then push it back to the sponsor and get some actual return for their digital efforts. So if that's something that you're struggling with or would like some help with in any part of the process, as I mentioned last week's episode, the process that we're following to value content and campaigns and develop rate cards is going to form the basis of the book that I'm in the process of writing. So if you're interested in that, interested in going through that process, please get in touch. And now here is my chat with Josh Grunberg from Whistle Sports. Very happy to welcome Josh Grunberg, the Head of Community Development and Growth at Whistle Sports. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Thank you very much for you coming on the show. You sort of got me out of a jam. I had a cancellation. I put the podcast signal up in the Sports Biz Slack, sort of asking for people. And then I remembered you're on the list, so sliding into the Sports Biz Slack DMs, and we're able to organise it. So thank you for taking part and being part of the Sports Biz Slack community.
Yeah, it's a great community to be a part of. It's a great meeting and networking with people like yourself and then many other smart people, and happy to chat with you.
So first of all, just want to get a bit of your background before getting into, you know, to Whistle Sports. You've sort of been in the sports scene for a while. Do you want to take people through, you know, how you got to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny when people ask this, it makes you like, wow, it's been a long time and now I feel really old. but it's also fun because it's such an amazing time. In the last 5-10 years have been such an evolution of sports content and sports media that it's been like totally crazy. I come from a journalism background, born and raised in Toronto, like many young Canadian kids, wanted to play professional hockey. You know, when I realized pretty quickly that I was too small, too slow, and, well, like, frankly, not talented enough
You're bringing up bad memories for me and my basketball career at being snuffed out at 16. So, you know, I'm sure there's a few listeners shaking of their dreams of a sports career, you know, definitely snubbed out early, and that's why they're working in the sports business now. So you were a reporter and a producer in Canada at TSN.
Yeah, exactly. I ended up, a dream job as a young Canadian kid, writing sports, specifically hockey highlights at TSN or ESPN Canada. And really was there for a number of years. And it was in around 2008, 2009, when Twitter became really the powerful news and breaking news tool that it has become or has evolved to.
So you were in the traditional TV, doing that kind of stuff as the social digital thing exploded, in that 2008, 2009, 2010 period.
Yeah. And the whole challenge there was how do we, find a way to bring social onto television?
Yep.
And that's where I first really developed this passion for social media, social content, and social video. Through networking and experience, made my way out to Vancouver to work for the NHL's Canucks, where I met a good friend of yours and previous guest on this podcast, Kevin Kinghorn, who's now the director of digital and runs everything from digital to marketing over there and does a tremendous job.
So, yes, completely a shout out to Kevin. But I'm a bit interested because TV at that stage of, 2008, 9, 10, 11, there was a bit of resistance of social because it was – hang on, is this another broadcast platform? And there was a bit of an awkward dance of how does TV use this? Because they're like, we don't want the eyeballs going to these other channels. What was it like being in an organization that was trying to figure that out while this revolution was happening, online?
It was, frankly, exceptionally frustrating because there's two – the traditional TV people saw social for two things. One, to drive tune-in.
Yep.
So it's just a marketing tool, and two, as a place to put TV on digital.
Yep.
Which we all know doesn't work. And what works is creating custom and unique and authentic experiences. And that was something that that Kevin and I in Vancouver worked really hard to do was flipping it around. Say, hey, can we create really cool custom for digital and social,
yep,
and use that to power other areas of the organization, whether it's in arena entertainment or the traditional broadcast areas. And we really did work hard to create custom programs, and we're actually one of the first teams to create a really strategic and well-thought-out YouTube channel in 2011, 2012, when YouTube was launching the partner program and really putting investment behind creators and businesses that were going all in on YouTube. And we grew. We had great success. The NHL was reaching out and asking us for advice, and we were networking with other teams. And through that, I formed a great friendship with a gentleman by the name of Dave Sethi, who was working at the YouTube Sports Partnership Team. And we had networked and we had talked a lot about collaborating and finding ways to work together. And the long story short there is that he and another colleague at YouTube decided to leave California, head to New York, where they were launching at the time what was called the Whistle Network.
Yep.
And I was among the first hires that they made to really come over and build this sports network of content creators from the ground up into what it is today.
Yeah, so I'm always interested in – so this is 2014. I'm always interested in when these startups form, what they wanted to be and sort of where they've actually ended up. What was the Whistle Network when it, in that first, in that first instance on what it was being presented as and in that first piece, and then potentially, what is it now?
So that's a really interesting question because the network as a whole was founded really on one core principle, was that our founder, John West, was watching sports programming with his kids. And this was at the time, if you go back to 2014 in North American sports, there was scandals left, right, and center, whether it be steroids,
yep,
or arrests or cheating, and everything was really negative. And it was surrounded on traditional television by commercials for beer or, yep, for Viagra and elements that were not friendly for a young audience. And the other element of it too was the younger audience was consuming content on YouTube and on mobile and not really tuned in to television. So the idea was to build a digital sports network based on social and content creators who were safe and connected with what we call the next generation and the up and coming generation of sports fans. So that was kind of like the impetus to create, and was to work with these creators, facilitate opportunities to create more content, use as a vehicle to drive branded content and development opportunities, and to really grow. Now, keep in mind, this is 2014. Facebook was, yeah, just getting into video. There's a whole lot changing. That was the impetus. That still kind of is where it's at today. It's just that it's changed a whole lot with the emergence of other platforms and numerous changes to the space from social to OTT.
So when you think sports network, like in the fact that, you know, TSN was a sports network, ESPN is a sports network, everyone thinks of sports network as, we want everyone to come to our destination, and that's where you consume our content, and it's a subscriber base. Like that's been the model. Whereas with you guys, it's you're going out to where the content creators are building out their audience and their channels and helping them with their content and what they're doing. That's how your network is. It's not that hub spoke model of driving everyone back to destination. Is that a good way of describing it?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I frankly don't think it's necessarily by design. I think where we've had great success was building this really strong, vibrant, global community of creators and creating this space where we could create for brands, create with leagues and teams, and create custom opportunities for distributor platforms, whether it be NBC, IOC, Facebook, YouTube, Red, etc. Yep. And in all of that chaos of growing from one creator up to almost 500 today, and over 425 million fans on a global basis or global scale, it's coming kind of at the expense of lack of focus of building really our own brand. Whereas today, we've kind of built it as more B2B, brand to brand, or business,
yep,
to business,
yep,
as a solution provider or a solution driven company. And so, I think where, yeah, we're at now is trying to pivot and develop and to form a much more impactful one-to-one relationship with our consumers, not necessarily in more of that in that network sense that you, yep, alluded to, but more of a media company that is creating in a way that can connect with fans.
So just so people know, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of content creators, and we sort of talked about it. What are some of, like, I have no doubt that a lot of people who are listening have seen a lot of content that's, I guess, in your network without knowing that it's in your network. Who are some of the content creators that you do work with that are pushing out content that people might know?
Yeah, I mean, our cornerstone franchise partner and one that's been around since day one and we're proud to be associated with and grow with every day is Dude Perfect.
Yep.
They are the every day it changes, but they're among the fastest growing YouTube channels in the world. They're the biggest in the United States. They produce 7 of the top 10 most watched branded videos on YouTube in all of 2017. They are an absolute powerhouse on YouTube, and it's all organic. It's all real. So they are really front and center in a lot of what we do and who we are. We're working on a tremendous project right now with the F2 Freestylers with YouTube. And we have worked on a number of projects with them. We're going around the world, experiencing new areas of the global soccer and global football scene.
Yep.
You know, there's Grayson, the Professor Boucher, who's an absolute legend in the street and basketball scene. Where we do a number of brand campaigns and have wrapped up, I think, our third or fourth campaign with Metro PCS. So really, we're at the forefront with working with the most premium sports creators on a global scale.
So from a process point of view, like, you know, and, you know, Dude Perfect, they're a, you know, online phenomenon, right? And in the content that they're producing and the virality and that rabid fans they have, where do you guys Like, how does the integration work? Is it, you know, when they're doing the, you know, the giant Pringle box tubes and they're doing all these things, is that, is those kind of plays where you're working with them and you come to them and say, this is what someone wants to do. Hey, guys, you're the creative guys. You're the content creators. You produce it, but we're helping bring the brands to your channel. Like, is that where, is that Whistle Sports' sweet spot?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. We work closely with the dudes on brands. There's no question about that. Another aspect outside of the brands, which is big, not to diminish though, is actually developing new content and new series.
Yep.
So over the past few years, there's been a new series that we've collaborated with them on called Face Off, a challenge series, and that's actually been distributed on Whistle Sports' YouTube channels. It's been one of the most, actually the most popular series that we've produced in-house to date, and use really Do Perfect as a marketing engine to help us build our audience and have real meaningful and powerful content on our platform. But it, so it's a combination of developing, collaborating, and connecting brands to a really powerful and epic content creator. Again, it's funny because you mentioned network earlier.
Yep.
You know, Do Perfect launches a new video every other Monday. There's only so many videos per year that they do. Yep. But they have done this unbelievable job of creating every other Monday at 6 o'clock Eastern in the evening of creating this. This is an epic moment that you have to tune into the channel to watch.
Yep.
And that's what people look forward to a couple times a month.
So then so your role, Head of Community Development and Growth, what does that entail?
Yeah, so it's a very startup-y title, but really the partnerships and relationships with creators and talent that we have are really the engine that powers the company. And I'm proud to oversee all aspects of working with the existing creator base that we have formal relationships with.
Yep.
And as well as coming up with the model for working with talent and casting for some of our premium development projects that we that we're producing quite regularly.
And so how much of your, I guess, whether it's under you or inside Whistle, how much of it is in that B2B business development brand, you know, talking to brands, that kind of thing, space, like from a resourcing point of view, and how much is it in content creators and editors and, you know, videographers and those kind of things? What's the mix of the resourcing inside Whistle?
Well, today, you know, we're pretty established and very departmentalized. We have a global sales team under the guidance of Paul Kelly. That's basically our global sales force to go out and target brands. And we have a really, you know, developed and well-functioning production team. And really where I sit is in the middle. So in the beginning in 2014, when we were 15 people, like it was literally all hands on deck. You do yep. whatever it takes to get something done. That's producing a video, that's writing a contract, redlining, you know, editing. You basically just figure it out. You know, now we're at like 85, 90 people. So while we're still kind of a startup, we're very much, you know, well run and efficient. We have a sales team, we've got a marketing team, we've got a production team, we've got our talented creator team sitting in the middle that's used to really funnel and cast and really power all of the projects that ultimately drive revenue and value to all of our partners.
And also you've also got your own channels too that aren't really in that, like that network model before, but it's where you are also producing your own content on your own channels, sometimes with your content partners, or as a nice little entree to bring potential content partners in to say, hey, we'll use our channel. Do you have people also coming to you saying, we love this idea, I want to build out my own channel, and that's how you can help them as well?
Yeah, you know, we've done some experimenting with the building of channels or the management of channels. We actually have a few projects ongoing now where we have people embedded in our company managing third-party channels and accounts, whether it be for a brand or platform. Not a huge part. It's a tough business to be in, and we're not really, you know, built to scale that
yep.
today. And we've done it on, you know, a few bases, and I think we do fairly well, but it's just something that's hard to scale across all the other priorities that we have. But yeah, our focus is trying to build and find that right cadence and voice and tone for our own social channels, so that we can really use that not only as a marketing engine for what we do, but to really establish our voice so that we can create franchises and properties that brands and other companies also like want to engage with and be a part of.
So one of the advantages you have is, especially with, you know, large content creators like Duke Perfect, and across different spectrums, different audiences, you also see where digital, but more specifically video, because it's a really big focus, where that's moving. And so that landscape's moved a fair way in the last 4 or 5 years, from YouTube to Facebook trying to be battling to where Twitter fits. What's your current take on where video is? There was a big push for everyone. You know, a lot of media organizations were moving and pivoting to video, and then you sort of seen later in the year that people calling pivot to video, you know, dead. Like I'm not in that camp. But where do you see the current landscape of all the different players in the video space at the minute?
Wow, it's I think that's the question that everybody is asking.
Yep.
On a daily basis, and you know, we've had great success over the past couple of years producing video on a custom video for a number of these platforms. We've done a number of shows for Verizon's Go 90 platform starting a couple of years ago, and then had a second season renew for a show. We're doing a show for Facebook. We're in talks with all the platforms. We've done a show for IOC. We're doing one for YouTube Red. It's hard to say. I mean, I don't think the pivot to video is dead. There is an arms race where everybody was trying to get in and succeed. But I think, frankly, what a lot of people completely underestimated, and you know, if you're racing to do something really quickly, and that thing you're trying to do is video and producing it at a quality level, it's really expensive.
Yeah,
it's really hard, and you can't just change the consumption habits of a fan or a viewer of an audience just to come in and, hey, here's my platform today. I've got four shows. Come sit down and watch. I mean, it doesn't really work that way. And I think those who jumped in really quickly and invested a lot of money, probably produced like some decent content. I think, you know, Go90 has some great shows on there.
Yep.
Some that are award winning. Are people watching? Evidently not. Mm. But I think it's the race is has to be more about like, how are you creating an experience around content and where it's living, where that's interactive and less passive to captivate and engage with an audience, which is why, and you and I were chatting about this a little bit offline, is why I'm personally very, very bullish on the potential of a platform like Facebook Watch.
Yeah.
Because I think it has all the components to really create that environment of that programmatic video in a place where you can interact and engage with fans and host so much shoulder programming around it on off days, before shows, after shows, off, like you can really create a 360 experience in a way that other platforms can't. And that's, I don't even know if I answered the question.
It's
changing. It's hard to like.
It is changing. I mean, I do think, you know, it is a bit of, you're taking your divining rod out and going, where are they going? Like, I do like where Facebook is headed. It has realized that it said, hey, we really want video. So everyone went with video. And they went, hang on, guys, you're being so successful. That's all people are seeing. You know, if you open up your feed now, it's all video. Now, this, you know, course correction of, hey, we're going to make sure it's more for the users and we're going to pull back a little bit. It still comes down to, if you've got good and engaging content and people want it, it'll get seen. But then also moving some of that content into the Watch platform, you know, makes perfect sense. And now, you know, now I just implore them that their Apple TV product actually becomes a TV product. That if I'm following all of these shows on Facebook Watch, that they're easy to find. So, you know, that kind of thing. But then, you know, YouTube's not sitting on its hands. You know, and there's a little bit of, you know, there has been that bounce back to people go, oh, I'm starting a YouTube channel, or oh, I'm putting more effort into YouTube in 2017, 2018. You know, you've got Kevin Durant trying to build out his own channel, and he's picked YouTube. So there's a bit of, yeah, you don't push all your eggs in the one basket. But there's definitely where is this going to play out? You know, you've got the whole, you know, Disney, Hulu, like the whole streaming thing, and you know the thoughts of Ben Thompson and the interview that he did with Bill Simmons, and them talking about the whole industry. Like, hey, we're not right. You know, I'm not running a big media network, but understanding where that you know industry is moving is beneficial if you're a content creator. Because I agree with you, you've still got to provide value for users, whatever platform it is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's been changing and evolving for so long. And I think even the other week when Facebook announced its changes, like the first reaction was like, oh my God, video is dead on Facebook or whatever. Yeah. It's gonna kill this. It's going to kill that. I mean, I don't really think, frankly, it's going to have a huge or drastic change in our business. Personally, I think it will for some publishers to get organic reach. But I think we've been seeing Facebook slowly make changes to the feed over the last 2 or 3 years for mass publishers to get organic reach so that Facebook can collect, you know, more marketing dollars.
This isn't really
new. So I think it's going to hurt news publishers and editorial sites. But I think for companies who are producing engaging content that owns the feed, I mean, I don't really think it's going to have a huge impact for companies that really specialize in native video creation.
And the thing is, as much as, you know, it is between Facebook and YouTube, there's a bit of omnipotence about it, and, you know, they know what they're doing. They're still figuring out what the play is. Like, you know, hey, this is what we're doing with Facebook Live. It works for this type of content, but not this type of content. They're trying to entree everyone into VR and 360 and how that works, and, you know, live 360. And they're trying to, again, prime their audience to go, oh, this is the type of content we want. Maybe in 18 months, it might be this year. I don't know if, you know, someone builds something that makes people put on the headsets, and that's how they consume content. So you've got people like, you know, Nancy Bennett producing 360-degree documentaries, and as more of that content comes on board, more people will start consuming it. So it's a little bit, does the platform push the changes or do the content creators push the changes? It's a bit chicken or egg, but they're sort of walking, you know, side by side.
Yeah, I think you're right. And from like a couple things that I'm keenly interested in right now is the ongoing and continuing press for brand safety.
Yep.
And the changes that YouTube announced was probably last week or 2 weeks ago with the partner program and the different thresholds for monetization.
Yep.
Making it a bit more challenging for individual and small pages to monetize and raising the bar required. I mean, I think that's actually a great thing. I think the initial feedback was probably outcry, but realistically, it's going to affect creators at a very small scale. Because if you're creating content on a regular basis and making an effort to grow an audience and you're doing it the right way and you're creating an environment that adheres to YouTube's guidelines and safety standards, I mean, you're going to hit those thresholds and you're overall going to be part of that community that can monetize. From a selfish perspective, it's good for a company like Whistle Sports that takes pride in only working with content creators who are quote unquote safe for all ages. So that's really great. I think the other thing that's really amazing to keep an eye on, and this is almost on like a weekly basis, is the platforms, all the platforms. Who's buying and who's buying what, and you know, when are they buying, and is it live broadcast, is it serialized content, is it documentaries, because that seems to be changing almost on a weekly basis. Snapchat's buying, Netflix is buying, Hulu's getting into it. I mean, like it's and then 1 week they're in and one week they're out, and I think that the real answer is that nobody really knows.
Well, that's why I like that the more players that are in, you know, the fact that, you know, Twitter was one of the first platforms to start buying rights and sports rights. So now, you know, Facebook will get into the game. They, you know, recently hired Peter Hutton around, but getting a better valuation of sports rights so they actually win them and not just, you know, get overbid. Even I saw this morning that LAFC did a deal for their games to be broadcast on YouTube. You know, which is, you know, again, another change, and another push for them, they're all going to be jockeying. And you know, listening to you know, a guy like Gary Vee saying, you know, YouTube, Facebook, Amazon are the NBC, ABC, you know, Fox of the new millennium is right, because that they're the players. And so as they've got these channels, they're going to want content, whether it's pure sports rights or, like you said, you know, different forms of content. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how platforms like Facebook Watch, renewed efforts by YouTube, you know, Amazon and different players, you know, or Netflix or whatever, with, you know, Netflix going doing a Juventus documentary. I think there will be that snap back to, you know, long form. Like, it's been great to be watching lots of short videos and, you know, long, you know, we miss the 6 seconds of Vine. But people still want to watch something that has a bit more meat and length and long form. What are you guys doing in the long form space that, you know, goes past the 15 or 20 seconds that people might want to watch something on a social platform?
Yeah, I think probably our proudest project to date, and that actually just kind of wrapped up its release a few weeks ago, is a show that we developed for Facebook Watch. It's called Next Trick Shot Superstar, hosted by Chad Ochocinco Johnson. Yep. And really the format was taking 18 social content creators and having a challenge theme to see who could be crowned, you know, the next Trick Shot Superstar. This was, you know, 10 episodes on average, you know, 15, 17-ish minutes in length. You know, this is actually something we were really excited about in the beginning was, hey, if we produce this show that has 18 social creators in it and has a host who has a real meaningful social audience,
yep.
it really brings out the best in what Whistle Sports is, because it's not only just, hey, content created, dropped on the platform, but it also comes with this like massive marketing engine.
Yep.
And we were among the shows that every episode we did well over 1 million views in short order of being released. And actually, as the series went on, grew in watch time and retention and engagement, which meant that we were connecting and building fans. So that's probably like our biggest and most proudest content project that we've done to date. In the long form space, and we do have a few ongoing projects with YouTube that I think will be smashing hits when they drop in 2018. But we're constantly developing solutions for a lot of the platforms. I mean, and to be said, on you know, while we are focusing on long form, you know, Snapchat we know is looking for probably some shorter form elements, and, yep. and we have some platforms we're talking to that are looking for 45-minute series. So, I mean, everybody's looking for different things. We've got a really skilled and talented development team led by Nate Laux, who's really thinking through the lens in an authentic way to really create great experiences for all these platforms.
Yeah, I mean, because, again, we're not just here talking about length, and I'm not taking it down that path, but, like, it is different for different platforms, you know, and the fact that now Facebook has effectively said watch is where the longer form pieces fit. Whereas traditionally, you know, if you want longer form stuff, that you're going to get longer watch times on YouTube because of just the way it's consumed. But the good thing about that, like that show, again, 10 years ago, that show just sits on Fox on a Thursday night, and it's, you know, it's in that space. And now that show fits, you know, better on these social platforms. But the other thing is once it's produced and it's had its run on Facebook Watch, there's nothing stopping that being then, you know, resold, put on Hulu or Netflix as something that can be binge watched at a certain time, that kind of thing. So, you know, that type of content can be, you know, reused and replayed on all these different platforms, because that's what they that's what they work for, and they need this content to fill out their platforms.
Yeah, I think even a perfect example of that is even on a platform like YouTube. Great quality videos that were released 2 to 3 years ago will sometimes all of a sudden pick up, you know, hundreds of thousands or even millions of views. Because it was discovered and made it through the Twitter sphere or Reddit, or yep. got picked up somehow, and got reshared. So I think even like on the social platforms or Facebook and YouTube in particular, evergreen content, I don't think we really know yet the actual life cycle.
Yeah, there's that real long time.
Yeah, we don't know. And I think to your point earlier on that quote from Gary Vee is like, I think that's absolutely bang on. Anyone who has young kids now, I truly believe they will see, you know, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Netflix, etc., as their major networks.
Yeah, and they won't even know what a remote control is, like, you know, because they're not doing this channel changing. They're talking to their TV and saying, please bring up this, or show me the latest from my, you know, so that it's just a completely different experience. I want to finish up with the Sports Geek Closing Five.
Sure.
Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I absolutely do. Like it was yesterday. It was at Maple Leaf Gardens, a Toronto Maple Leafs hockey game against the Montreal Canadiens. I was with my dad. This is the old arena before.
So before American Airlines, yep.
Yeah, and we were sitting up in the end greens, and I'll never forget. Anyone who's listening who was at a hockey game at Maple Leaf Gardens will know it was like so bright, and the seats were all different colors.
Yep.
We had like the golds at the bottom, the reds and green and blue on the end. It was just magic, and it was also the experience going into the arena. At that time, you could probably still smoke. It was like, it just smelled like burnt popcorn. There's, you know, the scalpers on the outside going into the subway. It was just a magical experience, and it was actually the moment when I first heard the public address announcer speak, where I knew that it was something in like broadcast or sports or journalism that I was attached to, and just it was an immediate connection for me.
Yeah, definitely sure it's familiar for a few people potentially in Toronto that probably went to a few of those games themselves. You would have gone to a few different sporting events in your time working in the industry. Do you have a favorite food memory or a go-to food at a sports event?
You know, I've been to so many stadiums and arenas across North America. So fortunate, and especially now you see a lot of the newer places have all these like trendy food items, and there's sushi or like yep. gourmet. This,
yeah,
like
see whatever. That doesn't work for me. I can't have sushi at a sports event. It's like if I can't drizzle it in sauce and cheese, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I'm just really good with like a nice all beef hot dog and a cold beer. Yeah. You know, I just and some good company.
Yeah,
that's all I need to have fun.
Yeah. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Typically the weather, but I think more to your point, I usually have my run through the social feed, starting with Twitter. Just to see what's going on. I'm on Twitter probably far too much every day. And then I do a run through Instagram, you know, Facebook a bit, just to see a lot of what's happening, what our creators are up to, and what trends are popping up that day. I'm not sure if the HQ phenomenon has made its way to you, but at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock Eastern, I am playing HQ trivia with the quizmaster Scott Rogowski on a daily basis, and that's become an amazing team building and bonding event here at Whistle Sports and at many offices across the world. I'm sure.
I am across it. I don't think the time zones are great for me, but it's a fascinating, like it's a like again it's just like an it's a new platform, you know, platform slash video model slash gamification that has just broken the model, like, you know, and the thing is it's broken the model, but it's also reinvented it, because people used to tune into The Price is Right and watch Bob Barker, but, you know, but this is interactive. So that's the, you know, the addictiveness, which is, you know, what the internet is, taking something that worked previously and mashing up and making your way. So it's interesting to see, I guess, the phenomenon behind it.
Definitely.
Do you have someone that you follow that you think the podcast listeners should follow, and why?
I mean, like other than ourselves?
Other than ourselves. It's always, you know, yeah. Again, people keep thinking I pay my guests to say that. There's no money changing hands. No, if there's someone that you either follow on Twitter that's a good follow for or a content creator that's up and coming that you think's doing a great job.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. I'm a huge fan. If you're into you know fitness and lifestyle and comedy, I'm a huge fan and proud to call them friends of the Buff Dudes, two brothers, Hudson and Brandon White, in Southern California, who have really just put an amazing spin on fitness entertainment. The Buff Dudes are great on YouTube. They're probably like my number one favorite emerging creator that we work with, and I'm really proud of it, is Destroying. He was a kicker in American football who went through a bit of an NCAA controversy on his way to becoming a YouTuber, and he's really found himself and is creating just amazing personality-driven content each day.
So what? What's his name and channel?
It is Destroying. D-E-E Strong.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't know if it was. I just want to make sure. But we'll put a link to that. Yeah, I was following because he was the one that went to, you know, the NCAA said you can't have the YouTube channel and you're making too much money. We're amateur. We don't make money in NCAA. That was his story, wasn't it?
That's absolutely correct. And I think at the time everyone was like looking at him, being like, "Hey, I don't think you're making the right call." But he's really set himself up well. Also, like for the purpose of creating an environment, and so that he'll be able to, you know, have the resources to go back to school.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg for the NCAA. For all issues they've got around not paying players and all that kind of stuff, in the next 5 years, nearly every, you know, every athlete will come out and they'll be an influencer of some sort. They'll have their own content platforms. You know, if they're going to try to unwind all that and say we can't do that, it's like, well, it's not the 90s anymore, guys. This is what athletes are as media platforms and as brands. That's already happening. So, we've got the extreme with the Ball family, but that's going to be the new normal.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be one of many issues that the NCAA is going to have to face and be challenged with over in the very near future.
So this question is a bit like picking your favorite child. But in the Kevin Durant, you're the real MVP. What social media platform is your MVP? And so you can answer it as Whistle, and you can answer it as you, if you want to be politically, you know, stay, be Switzerland and stay agnostic. What's working for you?
I mentioned earlier, like our success and excitement around producing the show Next Trick Shot Superstar for Facebook, and it's awesome. And I think that through Watch, there's this unbelievable opportunity to create this authentic, real, meaningful community around programming, which is really exciting. As far as an MVP, I mean, and maybe I'm biased because, you know, going back to my story in Vancouver and getting that YouTube channel started and building programs to really power it, and I'm a YouTube original gangster at heart, is I still love the platform and I love what it can do, what it stands for. I'm really bullish on YouTube TV and the integration that I think it can have. I don't think we've seen nearly the best of that yet. I think once they figure out kind of the over-the-top delivery in a more home-friendly manner. And when I say that, I mean like so people who not necessarily are wanting to stream from a device to a screen. But I think once they crack that code, I think it's going to be an amazing product that will be a real legitimate solution to cable. Those are the two I'm really, really excited.
It's a follow-up for me, and because I've asked this for, I think I've learned for the last 50 or 60 episodes, and most people stick to the traditional what social is, and because YouTube was before it, most people don't put it in the bucket. They go, oh, YouTube is a video platform. It's not a social media platform. And again, you can get into your definition of social media, but do you see it in that same space? Because it's not just a distribution, because it has this whole community, subscribers, people commenting, fans. Do you see it in the same vein as all the other social media channels as far as that scene?
Yeah, I mean, I view them all as content platforms. That's you're going to Instagram, you're going to Facebook, you're going to YouTube to consume content. Maybe Facebook's a bit different and Instagram's different in the sense that there's that friend factor. And on YouTube, maybe your friends aren't the YouTubers that you're following or engaging with.
Yep.
But I think to date, YouTube still has the best search and discoverability functionality. Yep. They have the best mobile viewing solution, no matter what device you're on. If you're a creator that has monetization built in, if you're a creator, it's got rights protection and rights management built in better than any platform.
Yep.
They're still so far ahead of the curve. And I still think that they've got more potential and room to go with. I think Facebook may have more potential in the social community aspect of it, given the way the platform operates. But I'm still on the, very much excited about YouTube.
I guess, I guess the bit that confounded people was, Google, trying to make Google Plus a thing and integrating YouTube in it, which is, probably confuses things. But I do, flipping the model, going back saying, yes, they're all content platforms is completely true.
Everyone wants to kind of like go poo-poo on YouTube for the Google Plus, but think about like everything that a social platform has tried for the last 3-4 years. They're all throwing stuff at the wall. Google Plus, I think, clearly didn't work out. I think the idea was probably like in the right space, but it's just, I laugh when people kind of want to, that's like their lasting legacy of YouTube evolution.
Go through a list of things that Facebook's done and stopped, because it's, go fast and break things is the philosophy. And so, people aren't using Facebook Poke anymore. And, the Facebook phone, that didn't happen. So, everyone's got a few things that they've tried and moved on, but that's part of innovating. So how can people find you on the internet? What's the best way to get in touch with you, Josh?
Yeah, pretty, active across, LinkedIn, Twitter, where I spend a lot of my time. Josh Grunberg, everything's open. Let's chat, let's connect. I love the sports biz community in the Slack channel in particular that you've created. So the best part about this community is meeting and talking to anyone and everyone around the world and their experiences, and so fortunate for the relationships I've made since sort of jumping into the space over the past few years. But look me up on LinkedIn, Twitter, or wherever. Drop me an email, I'm around.
We will put the links in the show notes. But if you're part of the Sports Biz Slack community, you can just hit Josh up on one of the Sports Biz Slack channels. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and I look forward to catching up. I'll be in New York later in the year, and so we'll have to catch up for a beer and maybe a hot dog, and maybe go to a sports event of some sort.
You got it. I appreciate you having me on, and thank you.
All right. Cheers.
Want to start driving more revenue from digital? Go to sportsgeekcampaigns.com.
Thanks again to Josh Grunberg, at Josh Grunberg, G-R-U-N-B-E-R-G, from Whistle Sports. Check out Whistle Sports. They do have a Facebook page and they've got their own channels. As Josh described, a lot of the big content creators, like the guys at Dude Perfect, are in the Whistle Sports Network. So I've no doubt that you've actually seen a lot of the content that Josh and his team have been working on. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about it. And I'm sure we'll catch up when I'm next in New York. And it's a really good case study for joining the Sports Biz Slack community. That is how I met Josh. He connected and joined the community. Obviously, we've got the mutual friend in Kevin Kinghorn. But there is a lot of really good discussion happening there. And you can join. If you're a listener, you qualify. If you work in sports biz, you qualify. And simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. One more thing for those of you who did not see it. Had a lot of fun this week on my Facebook page. So separate to the Sports Geek page, you can follow me at Sean Callanan Speaks is the URL, facebook.com, Sean Callanan Speaks. I did a Facebook Live Q&A with Jeremy McPeak. Jeremy McPeak is currently lecturing at Arizona State University, and so I hosted his digital strategy class. They asked questions around digital and podcasting and sports digital trends and sports business trends overall. And we actually discussed a little bit of the similar themes that I did with Josh around video and the fragmentation of rights and things like that. So if you're interested in that, you can go to go to my page, Sean Callanan page, or I will also repost it on Sports Geek if you want to watch it there. So that's pretty much it for the podcast. I still would like, from the call out from last week, I would love your feedback on my book idea that details how we go about our five-step process that we work through with Sports Geek clients, analysing their audience, their content, their distribution channels, and how they deliver things, working out the valuation and the value of what they're producing, and then how to pull it all together into a cohesive pitch. I'm currently talking to book publishers to get this going, but I'd love your feedback. If you want to put your hand up and say, yeah, you'll buy a book, that would be great. Give me some validation on the idea. It's becoming more and more reality the more meetings that I have. And the other thing is I've taken in some feedback on conferences. Love to know what conferences you're attending. Unfortunately, won't be at NSF in Dallas. A few people that do listen will be there. Hopefully I will get to NSF National Sports Forum at some time. That was suggested by a few people. If there's a conference that you say is must attend you think I should either attend or I should speak, please send me a tweet or an email. Some of the obvious candidates are the SEEK conference and NACMA in Washington and a few others. And so please send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. If you've got any questions or you just want to reach out. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/Slack. Please share your fave episodes of Sports Geek on LinkedIn. Be sure to tag Sean Callanan.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.